Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
See, if you're always winning and you don't really understand what it is to win, you got to take those losses. You got to take those hits. There's got to be the valleys, the peaks, the ups, the downs. In order for you to, when it does happen, you go, wow, qué rico. You know, this is what it's all about. And not only that, it's never about making it, guys. It's always about maintaining it. That's the toughest part.
G'day, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. It's Friday again. So here is another episode of Friday Wrap, as always. We haven't got a lot of news this week, but there's been, I mean, the quantity is little, but the quality is really up there. Let's put it that way. You know, certainly it's been quite an exciting week in terms of property as well as, I guess, Bitcoin. You know, it would be a shame to all the listeners who's not for us not to talk about Bitcoin this week, which usually we don't cover that much. But I reckon, Jazz, this week you will be one of our main players taking up a lot of airtime, which usually your crypto side usually is kind of more just a 5 minute wrap in that sense. But yeah, you'll be the main airtime this time, mate.
You're making me worried, David.
I'm setting expectations right for all the listeners, so they're obviously making sure they tune in till the last minute, right? About all of Bitcoin's what's happening. So anyway, but how are you doing, my friend?
Really good, mate. Been a bit busy week with all the stuff that's going on in the markets. And
busy buying, busy selling.
Busy watching.
Busy watching. Ooh, okay. Well, that's an interesting one. John, how are you, mate?
Oh, good, good. I would look forward to Friday and having a good chat with you guys.
Oh, yeah, as always, mate. I think just before the recording, I know both of us are kind of in tears sort of from the point that we haven't actually jumped on the Bitcoin skyrocketing train, I should say. Anyway, let's get into it. So, look, let's start off with property, I guess. We'll leave the best to the last to talk about Bitcoin later. And properties, we've got the highest clearance rates in property for the last 20 years. John, is that correct?
Yeah, well, when the preliminary numbers came out in Sydney, so it's the record breaking was specifically Sydney. That it came out at 88.7, and then it was revised down to 88.5. But that preliminary number was the highest clearance rate in 24 years. So that's since 1997. I think Bill Clinton's the president, Monica Lewinsky's in the news. That was when the last time we had clearance rates at 88.7%, according to the statistics. I've actually heard different statistics. I've heard it's the highest since 2005. I've heard 1997. Doesn't matter. It matters that it's big. And now everyone's openly using the expression, it's a boom, it's a boom. So if we have a quick, I mean, we won't get stuck into the numbers or the data, but if we have a quick run through the numbers, Sydney was nearly 89%, Melbourne 82%, Brisbane 69%, Adelaide 90%. I think some of us, we talked about Adelaide being the big performer of 2021, so Adelaide's at 90% and Canberra at 72%. Look, they're all going to bounce around. One thing is clear is that volumes are low. And we're still in early February, so tomorrow, this week, is the first big week of auctions. But even then, volumes are still low. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a fully-fledged property boom, and it's starting to make its way into apartments. That's the other thing that people are starting to talk about. You know, it was always about the houses. That's still the case, but apartments are really starting to boom as well. So Given that property moving up is not necessarily new news, even though it's sort of record breaking at the moment, what's your take on it? If we rewind, say 10 or 11 months, the consensus was that property was going to take a dive. That this was going to be super super bad, and it not only did it not happen, and it's one thing sort of forecasting that property isn't going to go down that much, but it's boomed. That's the opposite of going down. So what's your take, gentlemen? Like, what happened here? What did everyone miss? Everyone except for Spark Your Fire, I should say. But what did everyone miss about property?
David, do you want to get started?
He's always handballing onto me first, eh? Look, I think it depends on the I think a lot of obviously people looking back at the predictions made around this period of time last year, and that was on the assumption that we're right in peak of the COVID at that point. You know, it's just started to do the breakout. So infection numbers are starting to get higher. We're starting to see having rumors about lockdowns. It's starting to have an economic impact in terms of people losing jobs, retail stores getting closed, et cetera, et cetera. So I have a flow-on effect. But at that point in time, I don't think the JobKeeper, JobSeeker has been announced. That's one of the things that certainly has made a huge difference. And government pushing for banks to have the repayment holidays. That's another one that allowed people to keep their homes. And that, you know, could be, and that was, I think, released, announced as early as around April last year. And it continued for a good 12 months until pretty much now or end of March, right? So the key factors here really in terms of what those people making predictions at that time is they obviously weren't seeing that the assumption didn't include the JobKeeper stimulus with the amount of money that's in the system at the moment and the amount of support that's being handed out to both the corporate as well as the employees. You know, the JobKeeper started off with $1,500 per fortnight. That's quite a significant amount of money to be able to keep people afloat. And then the other, and then, yeah, and so that's the main one. And also the other thing is people are able to stop their and pause their repayments as such. So they're not forced into selling homes. And there's, so therefore there's no bloodbath as such for people to be forced to sell. So I think those two main points really has made a huge difference. And thanks to our government acting very, very quickly at that point in time, you know, when they see there's a big, there seems to be a shift in terms of the sentiment. They understand how critical it is property is to this country. They obviously do whatever they need in order to keep it up and make sure that, you know, we're not seeing a devastating 30% to 40% price drop, which is going to cause a whole catastrophe completely by this time. So I reckon, in my opinion, those are the two main things that's what triggered for everyone to be able to fly through. Now, since then, money's been cheap and we had further interest rate cuts down to about 0.1%. RBA's cut it down, cash rate down to 0.1%, plus printing all these stimulus in the market. You know, so the low interest rate essentially sparked a new form, a new set of demand of people needing for housing. You know, that's always going to be the key trigger in terms of people wanting to housing. And that really has lit the fire under the barbecue. I think we said, Jazz, you and I, we've been talking about that property's going to sizzle since they announced that last year. RBA's cut the cash rate down to 0.25 and they've cut it even further now down to 0.1, right? So, and the interest rates followed as well. You know, banks being basically very, very competitive. We're seeing what home loan interest rates as low as low twos, high ones. Some of the fixed rates are high ones. So money, cost of holding property is extremely cheap at the moment. It's very, very affordable, even though, yes, some price points are not affordable. But, you know, the amount that you can borrow now that we can take in comparison to what we were able to about 12 months ago, given the fact that interest rate has flowed through, has made a significant difference for people to be able to borrow, okay? And, you know, Jazz, I know you and I has all been harping on that. Even though you can borrow that, you may not necessarily have to, but at the moment, you know, seeing what's on the market with people competing, seeing there's no point in terms of keeping money in the bank account, and they go, why don't I buy property or some other asset classes to be able to push it up? So property has been one of the beneficiaries out of all this money printing in that sense. And because of the low interest rate as well. So investors are starting to come back too, and therefore causing a whole heap of demand. People just wanting to basically buy property as a bit of a safe haven if they don't want to invest into cryptocurrencies or stocks, which is a lot more volatile in the current environment. So, you know, I think that's why we're starting to see this big turn. However, I am still a bit skeptical towards the end of March at this point in time because JobKeeper, JobSeeker is coming to an end. You know, we don't know what the actual, what's really going to happen to a lot of businesses after the support, after that is being dumped off. So, yeah, I think we still need to monitor a little bit. And, you know, I'm also starting to see media changing their tones a little bit given the fact that home builder is starting to come to an end. That, you know, government, that the demand for brand new housing is may also like this to see a bit of drop as well. So are we at the prime time now? Are we looking at basically going the other way after March? I think it's a bit of a wait and see, but Jazz, it's a bit long-winded. I'll hand over to you.
I completely agree with your last point, David. And even speaking to some of the real estate agents, the market's really good. It's actually much better than I would have expected. And hats off to John, who called the turnover in the property cycle back in, when was that, John? In September, October, around that time?
Around October period.
Yeah, I said it in September, but I called it in April.
Yeah. So he was the first man to call it, and I think we were probably the first one to publish it, and those records can be verified easily. But anyways, to the point that I agree with you, David, on that, and speaking to some of the real estate agents, they are worried about as well that when the JobKeeper ends in March, whether this significant growth and demand that we are seeing in the market within the first 1.5-2 months of the year starting, whether it will sustain itself or not, to be seen. Maybe there will be a temporary dip. People will work out their finances and everything. They'll let everything settle. And probably again after that, we'll pick up once again, because the fact is still that it's right now probably cheaper to buy a house than to rent it, based on the figures that we discussed last week, which was, if you look at the charts, if you compare the repayments to the income, has never been this cheap since 1999. So when you look at that one chart, that tells you that the demand is here to stay. Maybe there will be a temporary pause, just people working on their finances as the JobKeeper stops and the economy hopefully picks up with commodities and all the other stuff that we have been discussing. So will be interesting watch, but I still think we haven't published this episode yet that David, you and I did with Kate yesterday, that we possibly will see 15 to 20% growth this year. It won't surprise me at all. And at least that's what the start of the year is suggesting. But the real bull market, or the last leg of the cycle, will come probably sometime mid to end of next year, I think, where it will just go ballistic, 30, 40, whatever that percent is. So, yeah, bullish overall, mate. Bullish overall, the interest rates are cheap, economy sucks. JobKeeper, time will tell. But from every single piece of data that we share between us, it's all looking positive.
And the one key pop you look for is after the March, what will the unemployment figures be looking like? Because I think that'll be a key major indicator. Although, I mean, in my personal opinion at the moment, for those people who are able to secure finance, they're not impacted by JobKeeper. And there's a lot of demand. So in other words, you know, it may not be as drastic as we all thought out it could be, in the sense that, you know, certainly not a lot of people or not a lot of employers were able to qualify this round of JobKeeper so far. So, you know, maybe it wasn't going to be a cliff as what they would anticipate it to be by the end of March. But John, what do you reckon?
Yeah, look, so I actually think, I'll tell you what I think people get wrong about property. But before I do that, I want to pick up on the unemployment piece. I don't think unemployment matters to property right now, and it's a cruel observation. But I don't think unemployment matters, and the reason is because of a quirk in the COVID-19 recession, or depression, perhaps, and that is that it's targeted certain industries more than other industries, and it's targeted certain demographics more than other demographics. So the COVID-19 depression is targeted, in terms of unemployment, younger people and people in hospitality and retail. And it's horrible and it's cruel, but that they weren't property buyers. So it's been, so you could look at this depression, I guess every depression is a massive wealth transfer. And in this case, it's a wealth transfer from the young to the old. So it's away from people in retail and hospitality towards people with assets or whoever benefits from low interest rates. So I actually don't think, I think people looked at quite correctly looked at unemployment being on the rise, and then concluded that it was going to impact real estate, but it's not going to impact real estate this time because it's impacting renters, not buyers. So that's my unemployment observation. My broader thesis is that most people, and economists included, don't understand real estate. And I think there are two things that they don't understand about it, and it's mostly about liquidity. The first thing I think is that whenever we use the word market, everyone just assumes all markets are the same, but real estate's almost the opposite of a stock market. And it's because when things get really tough, you sell your most liquid assets first and your least liquid assets last, right? So in a sense, your fist clenches more tightly over the real estate and you hold onto it even more, and you sell other things that you can. So they are saying is you sell what you can, not what you have. So things like stocks get sold off, bonds get sold off, cash goes, but real estate gets held. So it becomes almost impossible to buy it. So that's the first thing. And thinking that there's going to be a massive sell-off in real estate, this is like thinking that there's a recession, so people are going to sell food. Real estate's an essential, like it's accommodation. So, you know, kids, dad's lost his job, let's sell the baked beans. You know, that's not what happens. You hold on to that stuff because it's essential. The other thing with real estate is you can't have fractional ownership of real estate. You either own it or you don't. So if you own a bunch of Amazon shares, you can say, let's take a little bit of our Amazon shares off the table and you sell, say, 30% of it because you need some cash. You can't take some money off the table in real estate. You either own it or you don't. So you can't say, I'm going to lighten my holdings of my house by 30%. I mean, you could refinance it, but you can't change your ownership. So there's no sale process there. So I think they're the two big things about real estate. It's about liquidity. A final thing I'd add is that real estate always goes up when there's a market crash. So if you do a long chart of real estate and you plot the market crashes, you go to 1987, to the year 2000, and even to 2008 with a lag, real estate always booms after a stock market crash. And that's because there's always massive stimulus that comes in. And the stimulus goes to the most interest rate sensitive parts of the economy first, which is real estate. Mm-hmm. So stock market crashes are a gift to real estate.
So just two things. One is regarding the part ownership, John, you're wrong on that. So real estate does offer part ownership. It's just not that prominent or common in the market at this point. But if you look at a platform like Brickex, it does offer part ownership. So where you can buy certain amount, which is $5,000, $10,000, whatever the minimum is. And they have got selected properties that they review, do all the depreciation schedules and all that stuff. A free plug to BrickX probably over here, if anyone wants to go and check it out. If they plan to try part ownership, that's probably a good platform. That's the only platform that at least I'm aware of in Australia. So here comes a free plug. By the way, we have got no partnership with them, so this is just more of FYI. Secondly, just to what I said before, as John was giving his speech, my wife sent me a message that Victoria has gone into lockdown again for 5 days. Wow. So if we see things like these happening throughout the year, this one is a big caveat, right? Along with the JobKeeper that you already mentioned, David. But if we see more of this happening, start of the year, we saw Queensland doing it. Victoria has started again. So if this drama continues, well, call it drama or not, I just call it drama because I've been through COVID process. But if this continues, then we may see... I won't say we may see, but we'll probably have to relook at the facts and the data at that point to see what will happen to the economy and the real estate. But as the facts change, the opinion change. These opinions are based on the current facts, and the facts just changed as we were talking.
Yeah, that's how quickly things move in the current environment. So as you can imagine that, you know, someone made a prediction 12 months, that's like a prediction probably 5 years equivalent. That's 5 years ago, that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's how quickly things are changing now in 2021. So, yeah. You know, I can understand why most people would have got it wrong because, yeah, none of them obviously see that coming. None of them see that so much stimulus in the market. And to an extent, you know, John, I agree with you, like the unemployment figures are probably relevant to a certain extent. But I actually started to see that, do you guys think that is going to be a disconnect in terms of the employment and house prices?
Yes.
Just because of the amount of money that's in the market?
Cheap money.
Cheap money.
Yeah. There's a massive wealth shift going on. It's horrible. But I just don't think that the unemployment is necessarily hitting aspiring buyers.
Mm-hmm. I honestly think this wealth, John just made a very good point on wealth shift. There's a massive wealth shift going on, but the problem is if you are within the real estate, then that wealth shift doesn't really happen because it's only the ones who are wealthy enough can afford to buy again or refinance, buy another investment property. They keep growing their portfolio. We know how this works. All of us have done it. But the wealth shift that John is talking about probably leads us to the other direction, which is the world of cryptocurrencies, where the youngsters are playing the millennials and a whole new parallel world is being built, which amazes me to some extent when I look at the stuff that's going on. We talk about bank interest rates. Currently, I think if you put your savings in the bank account, you may get, if you're lucky, 0.2, 0.3, 0.5, whatever that interest rate is. I don't know. But in parallel to that, there's a new world being built where you can get a return of up to 20% with your money parked in crypto. Now, of course, it's a risky bet, but we will discuss it when we get to that. So that's just my thoughts.
I think it is a good segue. Yeah. Jazz, I reckon, given the fact that you already touched on crypto, that's dig into our main topic this week, which is basically Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So there's been a few key news that's been released on I guess cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. Jazz, do you want to fill us in or fill our audiences in about what's happening?
Yeah, I think the big one, all of us are pretty much aware of. So we just started discussing Bitcoin on this podcast. I think David, if you recall me if I'm wrong, at the start of last year it was, right? Mm-hmm. It was you more pushing me to talk about it over the podcast. I was a little bit...
It's one of your passion. Come on, how can you not talk about it?
But anyway, so we did discuss it. We made a few predictions. We made a prediction on Bitcoin. I think it was last year that it will hit 20,000 or something. And it went past that without even stopping or looking back straight to 40. And currently it's trying to test 50. But anyways, the big piece of news in this space over the last few months, and especially this week. So going back a few months ago, we discussed about MicroStrategy, and the listeners who listen to this will know how MicroStrategy ended up converting all their cash balance on the balance sheet into Bitcoins. So I think they had about $450 billion at the time, oddish, sitting in their balance sheet as cash, and they made a purchase of Bitcoin for the whole lot. And then on top of that, as if that wasn't enough, they raised capital through convertible bonds, which was another 500, 600 billion, and then ended up buying more Bitcoin. So as of now, MicroStrategy currently holds 70,000-ish Bitcoins on their balance sheet, right? So they have already more than tripled their money or doubled their money since the purchase. However, they plan to hold on to it for long term. So the game started with MicroStrategy announcing their first purchase publicly, which is a publicly traded company, announcing that, yes, we have made a purchase. And that was around the price point of 10 to 11,000. And then, obviously, it came out into the media. There were tweets about it and all that stuff. And somewhere within those tweets came Elon Musk, which I think everyone knows who Elon is, founder of Tesla, SpaceX, and all. So I think Michael Saylor, who's the founder of MicroStrategy at the time, tweeted about how he's made this purchase, converting all the cash on the balance sheet into Bitcoin. Within 3 months of that tweet, or actually 2 months of that tweet, Tesla announced, as of this week, that they have made a purchase of $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin on their balance sheet. Now, I don't know if people understand this or not, but Tesla announcing a purchase of $1.5 billion, which is more than what MicroStrategy did. So they probably ended up buying half the Bitcoin what MicroStrategy did because the price went up. I think their price point, I'm guessing, Elon hasn't announced it, but their price point, my guess, looking at the price, would be around 36 to 37K USD, because the price went straight up after that, after announcement. So my guess is that's the price point they purchased it at. So it's a publicly traded company. It is known for challenging the status quo in the tech world. And now they have started accepting Bitcoin as a form of payment if you're purchasing a car as well. And that all they did within a week after the announcement that you can actually purchase Tesla through Bitcoin. And they will decide as a company whether they will convert that receipt of the purchase back into fiat or leave it as a Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So I think it being one of the top 500 companies currently and well-known in the tech space, over the next few months, people are going to get surprised with some of the other companies that are possibly going to come out and announce similar things, whether they will convert 10% of their balance sheet or 50%, or some maybe as crazy as Michael Saylor converting 100% of their balance sheet into BTC. So to me, this has really stamped the existence of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency into this world. People who still think that it's going to go down to zero, I think probably need to get their heads checked now. Because I honestly will be surprised when publicly traded companies are buying it as a treasury reserve asset on their balance sheet. And then as of this morning, Canada announcing the very first Bitcoin ETF. All this is damn bullish. So I think this is a space to watch. People who are interested in the crypto space, they should really understand the technology and learn how this piece of art works before investing their money into it. Because it is, in all honesty, for anyone new who's jumping into this space, it's almost impossible to grasp this thing at the very start, purely because one, the technology is too advanced. It's a very new form of technology. And secondly, just knowing the technology is not going to help you. You need to understand how the macro framework in the finance world works, which we have discussed on this podcast quite a lot over the last year. So it's a combination of few things that you need to know to be able to grasp this thing. And it's very volatile. It goes up and down like anything. So currently it's at 50,000. It won't surprise me in 2 months if it's at 100K, or it won't surprise me if in 2 months it's at 20K. Neither of them will surprise me. If I was to pick one, I'll probably pick 100 over 20. So it's a space to be watched. And I think millennials shouldn't just ignore it, but they should spend time learning about it, because there's a lot of finance applications being built on top of this technology that is both Bitcoin and Ethereum and some of the other ones that are coming out as well. So massive rant. David, you are owner of BTC anyway, Bitcoin anyways now, because you own Tesla shares. So one way or the other, you are more indirect. So
I'm an indirect owner. You're right. I'm obviously kicking myself for not owning enough Tesla shares at the moment. That's the only other problem. Just like everyone else is saying, not owning enough Bitcoin in the same sense. But yeah, look, I agree with you, Jazz. I think this is definitely, as a matter of fact, I think this is what we're seeing now is probably a historical moment from Bitcoin perspective and cryptocurrency perspective, that it changes the whole tone in terms of how everyone and the businesses and looks at it, right? You know, understanding that Tesla has been a technology leader in a lot of sense, and you know, the business itself, especially led under Elon Musk, has got huge potentials. Not just in the car industry, but also later on, they will be getting into more of an energy sector as well, which is probably going to be their main game. And imagine that someone will be able to pay their bill using Bitcoin via Tesla Energy at some point. Mm-hmm. That is going to be truly transformative in terms of how Bitcoin is going to get used. So, you know, I see that Tesla being a lead in this sense, and like we discussed before, jumping on the podcast, there will be more and more corporate that will slowly coming into the from woodwork as well, in terms of accepting Bitcoin as a form of the transfer or at the point of sale, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. So I think it really marks that era, start of the cryptocurrency era. I wouldn't say that I completely understand it. Otherwise, I would have been on the Bitcoin ship myself by now. but, you know, I guess John and I are kind of more in the old-fashioned way. I mean, we're both learning at the moment, but, you know, we still kind of prefer to park our money in the traditional type of assets. But now that seeing that this is certainly a new era, we need to pick up our pace to understand how the cryptocurrency world work. Not saying that I will be jumping in, of course, but it's worth understanding the technology behind it, either Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatsoever. It's an amazing technology, let's put it that way. And in terms of how it can be used in the future, you know, once we start understanding a bit more, I think it's, you can understand why the Gen Zs, the millennials are so into it, because they're seeing a different form of wealth, you know, a different form of storage of wealth, in the sense that, you know, they certainly love this stuff, and they understand it, they love it, and this may be the future in comparison to the old traditional way of currencies, paper currencies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
John?
Yeah. So for context for the listeners, I missed big on this, so I do not understand this, and I'm about as wrong as you can be on cryptocurrencies, and I'm sort of kicking myself and licking my wounds. By contrast, Jazz knows all about this stuff, and Jazz has taken to like texting me the latest Bitcoin news, like so and so's, you know, PayPal's adopted Bitcoin, MasterCard's adopted, and I'll just write back, I hate you, because it's a constant reminder of my error. I'm not sure if I mentioned on this podcast before, but my wife and I were chatting about Bitcoin in like early, because, you know, as gold guys, we were aware of it. Yes. And I remember Chris, my wife said, "Oh, you know, should we maybe just put $5,000 in?" And it was like $3 at the time, and I said, "No, I just cannot believe it." Anyway. Anyway, fascinating. I mean, I think Elon Musk actually bought the Bitcoin. I read this somewhere that he bought that $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin through Tesla back in December. So it might have been responsible for that news. I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but he started tweeting about it afterwards. And so he might, you know, they're trying to get him in trouble for that. But I think he's certainly fine. The mass adoption of Bitcoin is certainly on track now. And like all mass adoptions, you get certain phases. You get individuals, and certainly the individuals who are well-educated and understand this stuff and like to take risks, and they adopt it first. And we're kind of in the second phase now, where companies are adopting it, because there was some infrastructure that needed to change for Bitcoin to be purchased by companies, but that's been solved now. So we've moved from individuals, small group of individuals, to a large group of individuals, and now we've moved on to companies. After that, I think it's Wall Street, and I think Wall Street might reject it, but I think they'll get on board, and then finally sovereigns. So that the end game here, I think, has to be some sort of sovereign adoption, and you see that in places like Iran and I think Venezuela are looking at cryptos and they're mining it officially. I was listening to a podcast with Jim Rogers, the famous investor, and he was saying if Bitcoin gets too big and starts competing with sovereigns, the regulators will come in and outlaw it. And I think he's wrong on that. I think Bitcoin will be adopted somehow. So I think it's fascinating. You know, I think that I talked about the company phase, so individuals to companies, and what we're going to see is massive FOMO from the corporate executives, who are now going to start to be peer pressured into putting some Bitcoin on their balance sheets as well. And you'll see it like earnings reports, where the board are up there and they're getting asked questions. They're going to start to get asked questions, why don't you have a portion of your assets in Bitcoin? And for those that resist and then start losing money, shareholders are going to remove those boards.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just a matter of time that they're going to start looking at it. And when the world's billionaire comes onto the news to say, yes, we have purchased X amount of Bitcoin, I think people are going to be taken for a surprise this year, in my opinion. And I think the news that really got overshadowed with the Tesla news this week was MasterCard, which is MasterCard now accepting cryptocurrency as a way of payment when you're spending your money at e-commerce platforms or wherever, retail joints. Now, that is a huge deal. So far, crypto was native to the crypto wallets, which it was living in isolation. Whereas now, if you look at it, just with that one announcement, anybody, as soon as it's implemented, anybody who has got a MasterCard or a Visa card, which I'm sure it's about 95% of the population. The point is that almost all of us who are using banking system have got a Master or Visa card, whether it's a debit MasterCard or whether it's a MasterCard credit card, whatever it is, right? Now, they're going to use their platform to allow you to make payments, if you prefer to, in whatever selected cryptocurrencies. So all of a sudden, this thing, which was living in its own isolated world, is available to everyone. And then on top of that, there's corporations like Tesla and MicroStrategy and whoever else is going to come out tomorrow announcing the purchases on their balance sheet. I think we are really seeing it going mainstream this year, in my opinion. I think this is the year where crypto just goes mainstream. Whether it will be used that much on the by the e-commerce and the retail platforms, that can be questioned. But I think as a platform itself, available to majority of the population, I think it's just going to be mainstream this year. And likes of PayPal and others announcing there's now institutional grade platforms like Gemini, PayPal, where you can just purchase these currencies easily, right? And it's proven over the last 10 to 12 years that it's not going anywhere. Yes, it is volatile, but it's not going anywhere. Yeah. So this is where the game becomes really interesting. Is current banking traditional world offers obviously super low, and if you're in parts of the Europe, negative interest rates, and all of a sudden there's this new currency, which one is going hyperbolic in price and then crashes, obviously, but at the same time offering 8 to 10%, up to 20% returns just by lending it for traders to long and short kind of thing. It's getting very interesting is all I'll say. Space to be watched.
Yeah. A couple of things. There are interests who would like to see Bitcoin fail, and they're fairly powerful. It's worth just touching on this. So firstly, Wall Street serves to lose from widespread Bitcoin adoption. And the reason is because Bitcoin means you don't need an intermediary. So, you know, I transfer money to Joe Bloggs, but I have to do it via the bank. Bitcoin eliminates all that, and that's great for us consumers, but it's bad for Wall Street. So there might be some resistance there. And similarly, at the sovereign level, part of the power of nations is the power of their currencies, and this is a direct challenge to sovereign currencies. So there'll be some resistance. Now, what Bitcoin has in its favor is it's so decentralized. You can't go to the Bitcoin head office and arrest this CEO and cart him away because it's so decentralized that there is no Bitcoin head office. So that's what makes it sort of very, very interesting. Widespread adoption? Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's only one challenge, and Bitcoin and gold are similar like this. It's no one really knows how to value these things. So gold is very difficult to value. What is it, a percentage of the M2? And Bitcoin's the same. How do you value it? It's very difficult to know if it's a bubble or if it's the beginning of a bull market. And that's one thing I'd say, that it shares with a couple of assets.
And look, those are the kind of risks that are in this space for the hodlers of the Bitcoin. They obviously see their net worth go down by 90%. We see retail investors who burn their hands, buying at the top, selling at the bottom kind of thing. So there are risks in the space, but that doesn't mean you ignore the space completely. I think you educate yourself in this space, just like property. You don't over-leverage in property. You don't buy in the trouble areas. unless they're getting gentrified, that's a different thing. But it's no different to any other investment class. When you're buying stocks, you do your homework, right? When you're buying property, you do your homework. It's crypto is the same, right? So you just got to do your homework. I think it's the lack of education and lack of knowledge in this space, but it's new. Having said that, it's new. So it's only 10 years old, and the real true products that will change life or the finance world forever are only just getting started to be built on it in the last year or so. So I think it's a great space to watch. It's a great space to educate yourself, and it's a great space to make money at the same time. So it's just how keen of a learner you are and how big of a punter you are.
Peter Thiel, I'm way out of my depth on crypto, but I remember Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, who did PayPal with Elon Musk. He got into crypto way before Elon Musk, and he said cryptocurrency is like capitalism and AI is communism. So he was sort of saying crypto is going to free the world and it'll blah 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 blah, but you got to watch AI. AI will do the opposite. So
yeah.
I don't know enough about either.
These are interesting subjects. We'll try and cover some of these, and we'll try and bring more of these the ones that we think are legit platforms in the crypto space on our podcast as well, to educate listeners and get educated at the same time. We don't know about everything, but it's getting interesting. It's getting really interesting.
So. I think, Jazz, with your Bit series starting out from last year, you've had a few of the big cryptocurrency guys, experts around the area. For those people who's keen to understand a little bit, which of the episodes would you kind of recommend them to tune in back in? Because I think that could be a good starting education resource for those people who want to learn.
Yeah, I think if they just go back and look at the Bit series, Bit episode one, the first
one.
Yeah, the first few that we did, after that we sort of pivoted covering other asset classes as well.
Yeah.
But
the first few? I think the first few would be are there.
Good enough to get a very non-technical basic understanding. Because if you specifically look at the crypto podcast, they can get very technical, whereas ours one was not that technical kind of thing. It was more educational. So anyone who wants to learn about it, and we even compared it with property and some of the other asset classes. So if they want to go and check it out, all I'll say is just don't ignore the space thinking it's a scam or a tulip mania. There are scams without a doubt, and we have said that many times. Probably 50 to 70% of them are scams. But Elon Musk is not a scam. Michael Saylor is not a scam. So,
Good one. Yeah. No, I think that's good in terms of coverage. And I'm sure we'll have more coming up later on as well, Jazz. I think you'll be able to talk more, a lot more moving forward about giving us future updates.
Yeah,
from this point onwards. So
I'm keen to learn, so I'll try and bring as many people to challenge us on some of these platforms that are being built, the legit ones. Hopefully they'll be the legit ones, but we'll see.
Even where we are now, Jazz, and I know you've been watching this space for a while, what do you reckon? Do you want to make a prediction of where Bitcoin is going to be by the end of the year?
By the end of the year, we'll see six digits on it.
Six digits?
Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it will stay in the six digits, but we will see six digits on it.
All right. Well, I think that's anything else we want to cover, gentlemen, on that?
No. Bitcoin, fascinating.
Fascinating. Yeah, I know. Fascinating.
Shame on me.
Well, to the listeners, like always, it's fun. We just like to have fun chat. It's our passion, talking about these different things, Tesla, stocks, property, commodities, Bitcoin these days. So don't invest just listening to this podcast. Do your own research. Speak to your financial advisor, the legit ones. There's a lot of dodgy ones out there. And we'll
Doge
see.
Ones. There are a lot of Doge financial advisors.
There's a lot of, I like that. Doge advisors.
And they ask you to buy Doge coins.
So try and stay away from the Doge advisors. And we will come back next week talking more about whatever is happening in the market at the times, whether it's property or commodities. We don't know. Maybe it's silver in next week or two. Who knows? We'll see. But stay in peace. Don't take out too much loans to buy crypto. Try not take out any loan to buy crypto. and try and keep your LVRs within the right ratios. And we'll catch you guys next week. Cheers, Jazz, John, and David. Bye.